Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift between now and the end of the year, we'll send you a CD of an Advent and Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size year-end gift, we'll send you a CD of Todd's Advent and Christmas sermons.
Well, it's Edward. He thinks you're dead.
What?
He's going to the Volturi. He wants to die too.
He left you, Bella. He didn't want you anymore.
I have to go.
He's gonna make a scene. The Volturi will kill him if he reveals himself in the sunlight.
No, Edward, don't!
I'm scared. This may hurt just a little.
No, please, please!
Well, certainly thrilling young ladies all over the country, all over the world by the box office. The film Twilight New Moon opened, and we're going to review it here in the last half hour of Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 24th. What is it all about, and how do we explain the sensation that is teenage vampires, young women, even a werewolf or two? And I don't mean to sound crass, but it looks like a lot of young men walking around with their shirts off seems to be part of the appeal here. But it's not just the teenage girls, it's their moms too. And it started with the books. We'll review the movie Twilight New Moon. Dr. Richard Stuckwish is our guest. He's pastor of Emmaus Lutheran Church in South Bend, Indiana. Dr. Stuckwish, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
What explanation do you have, not only for the fact that this has obviously a tremendous appeal to teenage girls and younger, but also to their moms?
Well, that is something I've thought about a lot. I mean, already a year ago when you first talked to me about the series. And I think there's several things. I mean, these are just my own insights and perspectives. But first of all, I think a lot of young women, and by that I don't just mean teenagers, but women in their 20s and 30s and even beyond that perhaps, but a lot of young women in particular identify with Bella, with her doubts and fears about herself, with her insecurities and so forth, but also they see in Edward's devotion to her the sort of devotion that they long for themselves. And I realize there are concerns about the nature of their relationship. I have some concerns too, but setting that aside for the moment, it's clear that Edward is, you know, fiercely devoted to Bella, that his whole focus and attention is on her. Everything he does is with a desire to serve her, care for her. And, I mean, I think that is the kind of love that women do long for, and not to say that men don't, but I think there is a particularly feminine character to this desire, which theologically I would say is built into the way that God has created women to live in relationship to their husbands and fathers, and ultimately the way in which the church lives in relation to Christ. So I do think there's a genuine and legitimate hunger and need there, and in the fictional story at least, there's a resonance with the fact that here's this, as the author describes him, this almost perfect man whose whole life is devoted to Bella. And along with that, then, her insecurities, her doubts and fears about how could he possibly love me, what is it about me that he's so devoted to, I think that does resonate with a lot of young women. I think there are some other things, too. I mean, the books are written in a very pop culture kind of vein, and so they're easily digestible, and I do think people respond to that. I think the teenagers respond to that. But along with that, something that we talked about last year is There's a strong cross-cultural current to these books. Some of the values that are set forth are very contrary to the kind of values that are very prevalent in our society. The waiting until marriage before sex, for example, the strong family values, the value that's given to marriage, and the pro-life position. Now, some of those things really don't come out until the later books, but there already are hints of them in the earlier books. And if one takes the series as a whole, these are things that really come out very prominently. And it has intrigued me from the start that something that is so incredibly popular, should really be pretty prominent in setting forth some cross-cultural values in that regard. So it has led me to think that for a lot of young women, they really would like something more significant and more substantial than the kind of thing that pop culture typically throws at them. I don't think that most young women are really interested in just, you know, a physical, sexual kind of relationship, but they actually want someone who cares about them, who takes the time to get to know them, who attends to their needs, who listens to them. I do think that that whole listening thing is, it's in there in the fact that the one person whose mind Edward can't read is Bella's. So he knows what everybody else is thinking, but with her, he has to pay very close attention. He has to listen very carefully, and he is captivated by her words. He longs to know what she's thinking. He's always asking about her thoughts and feelings. And, I mean, we men ought to catch a clue that, that women actually want us to show interest in them. Our wives want us to listen to them, to pay attention to them, to discern what they're thinking and feeling. So, I mean, those are the reasons I think the books are so popular with young women.
How would you describe the storyline, the basic storyline of the Twilight series?
Of the Twilight series? Well, you know, I'm not, the first book doesn't really have much of a storyline. It's kind of just an immersion in Bella and Edward's romance. And I tend to like the other books much better because they do have a plot to them, a narrative. There's more story movement. As far as the overarching narrative of the entire series, I'm not sure that there is clearly one, other than exploring the challenges and significance of this very difficult relationship. I mean, there are a number of different undercurrents. Some of them I already mentioned. I think the books do set forth very prominently the strength and importance of strong family bonds. I think that's very prevalent and a very positive thing. You have explorations of friendship, certainly of romance, and sometimes the tensions that emerge between friendship and romance. You have a high value placed on marriage, which I applaud, although it does raise, in the back of my mind, it raises some questions because of Stephanie Meyer's Mormon background. But nevertheless, in the books, you see marriage held up very highly as a good thing, and I like that very much. There's a strong emphasis on the value of human life. I mean, that really is there right from the beginning in the fact that Carlyle and his family, including Edward, have made this conscious, deliberate decision to live, to resist the impulses of their nature, but to live in respect for human life and not to take human life, and rather to find other ways to survive, even though their nature kind of compels them to take human life. There's a very high value placed on human life. And you know, whether that's not really a narrative, but there are these themes that really run through the book. From what I understand, the first book was written after Stephanie Meyer had a dream, essentially the meadow scene from the first book, where you have Edward and Bella there in the meadow, and really the dream centered on the difficulty, the impossibility of this relationship between these two people. And whether that already involved a vampire or whether that came later, I don't really know, but the first book was really just dwelling on and exploring that challenge presented by a relationship between, you know, two people who seem, on the surface of it, to be utterly incompatible, and why this would develop, and yet how do they make it work? The second book uses, and this comes out in the movie to some extent too, uses Romeo and Juliet as kind of a plot device, and you have that whole tragedy of Romeo and Juliet each committing suicide there at the end. That's kind of a theme that runs through the second book, but that's not really an overarching narrative that runs through the series. So I'm not sure I can really answer that question. I'm not sure there is an answer.
Now, before we go to our break, with only about a minute here, is there anything in the Twilight series that you would say is anti-Christian?
Well, it depends on what you mean by anti-Christian. As far as, you know, deliberately hostile to Christianity, I don't think I would say that per se. There may be some implicit and subtle things. I don't think there's anything overt. As far as things in the story that are contrary to the Word of God? There certainly are those things. Now, one can debate whether that's appropriate or not. I think if one simply evaluates the series on the basis of the second book, which is now the new movie that's out, one would get perhaps the most negative impression of the series that one would get in looking at any of the books. But I think part of that is because in the series as a whole, the author really has Bella starting at one point and growing and maturing and developing and learning, so that, you know, there's movement from where she's at in the first two books and where she ends up in the last books. And I think she has pretty effectively brought the readers along with her in that regard. Now, maybe some people get to the end and say, oh, I don't agree with this, I don't like this, but I think that's what the author is maybe trying to do. There certainly are things, though, especially in the second book, that stand contrary to the Word of God. So if that's what you mean by anti-Christian, I would say yes, there are those elements.
It's Tuesday afternoon, November the 24th. I'd like to know what you think about Twilight. Have you seen it? What did you think? Your review, if you want to give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. The new movie, Twilight New Moon, is the subject of our conversation. We're reviewing with Dr. Richard Stuckwish. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can email your questions or comments to us as well. talkback@issuesetc.org or Twitter us @issuesetc. Dr. Richard Stuckwish is pastor of Emmaus Lutheran Church in South Bend, Indiana. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to J.P. Moreland about the failure of naturalism. When we come back, I think some Christians are uneasy with the idea of vampires and werewolves and the dark world that they may seem to represent. Of course, we've learned with other famous and popular novels and movies that sometimes if it's a wizard or a witch or a vampire, it's not always something turned toward the occult. We'll see what Dr. Richard Stuckwish thinks about this. On the other side of the break, we're reviewing New Moon. Stay tuned.
This is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa, Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri, and Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300. We're reviewing the movie Twilight New Moon here on Issues Etc. 10 more minutes with Dr. Richard Stuckwish. I'm Todd Wilkin. Folks, you can help us equip the priesthood of all believers like we're doing right now in reviewing these popular movies. By making a year-end tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc., you can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, or online at our website, issuesetc.org. For any size gift before the end of the year, we will send you a CD with an Advent and Christmas sermon that I have preached. As our way of saying thanks, LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, or go to our website, issuesetc.org. Before the break, you talked about examples of things that could be contrary to God's word in at least in the second film. Specifically, what would that short list be?
Well, I think my number one concern is, and this really is what drives the plot in the second book, is that the relationship between Bella and Edward is it's flat out idolatrous. There really isn't any better way to say it than that. And I know people are not necessarily accustomed to thinking in terms of idolatry apart from little statues and so forth, but the fact is that for both Bella and Edward, and this is made explicit in some of the things they say at various points, and it's also demonstrated in their actions, they make gods out of each other. In fact, their highest god. Bella at one point basically says she doesn't even want her soul. She would rather lose her soul in order to have Edward. And when he leaves, she just goes into this catatonic state. She falls into utter despair, and she neglects her father, her friends, her vocations, her stations in life. Everything just goes by the wayside because she's just thrown into despair. And Edward, likewise, when he thinks that Bella has killed herself and died, he goes off to commit suicide. And this is kind of the theme. It's the Romeo and Juliet undertow, but it's very prominent that they make false gods out of each other, and that probably is my number one concern. And I suppose it's of concern because people are prone to do this anyway, not only in romantic relationships. Parents do this with their children. Children do this with their parents. People do this with their friends, with their spouses, certainly, boyfriends and girlfriends. And this kind of idolatry is something that we ought to be called to repentance for, not lauded as the height of great romance. So that probably is my number one concern. Some of the other things that kind of go along with that is that, and this doesn't come through in the movie so much because, frankly, there's not a lot of interaction between Bella and her parents. There is some with her father just because she's living there with him, but I was kind of disappointed in a number of the other relationships that aren't developed as well in the second movie as I think they were in the first. But certainly in the book, Bella loves her parents. She cares about them. She doesn't want to hurt them. But the relationship is really turned on its head. She really views it as she has to take care of them. She has to protect them. She has to hide things from them. And she does not honor and respect her father by following his wishes. She does not obey him. She sneaks around. She does things that he's explicitly forbidden. She hides things from him. And yes, I understand that young people do all of these things, but that obviously doesn't make it right. And that does occur in the books with some frequency. And there's a certain tension there because she does love her parents. She cares for them, but she doesn't really honor them. She doesn't serve and obey them in the way that a child is called to serve and obey his parents or her parents. So that would be another thing that I find disturbing. In the book, one of the things I liked best in New Moon was the friendship that develops between Bella and Jacob. And in the beginning, I really like that friendship. It's very similar to the friendship you find between Harry, Ron, and Hermione in the Harry Potter books, where it really resonates as a genuine kind of friendship. They're drawn to each other because they share mutual activities, they enjoy each other's company, they simply have fun being together. And over time, certainly Jacob becomes more and more infatuated with Bella. He falls in love with Bella, and you have that tension developing. And I think that's a useful thing to explore in the books because that happens. I mean, there are those kind of tensions in life that people do have to deal with. And so I don't mind the book taking that up. But I really liked the kind of friendship that developed with them initially. And the movie, I think, dropped the ball in that regard. I mean, they made some choices, and they accelerate kind of Jacob's infatuation with Bella, so that really right from the very beginning, there's that competing for her affections, and you don't see the friendship developed in the way that it is in the books. Now, the thing that I don't like about that is as the tension grows, as Jacob becomes more and more infatuated, and Bella is well aware of this, is that she really allows that to grow and develop. She doesn't clearly mark any boundaries, and you know they're not engaged in illicit sexual activity, but there's a kind of romance that she simply goes along with, even though she doesn't desire anything more than friendship, and she knows that Jacob is really pursuing something more than that, and she kind of uses the confusion and the tension to her advantage. And she admits this. She feels guilty about it, but she does it anyway.
Dr. Stockwish, I'm curious, two quick final questions.
Yeah, sure.
As our time winds down, I'm curious whether or not Christians should be concerned about this film because integral to the plot, although the story could be told without it, perhaps with less visual effects, is the fact that one of these guys is a vampire and several of them are also werewolves. Your thoughts there, pastorally, with about less than a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's the same answer I've given you in the past when we've talked about Harry Potter. I mean, these things are literary devices. They're fictional creations. I think Stephanie Meyer has actually done a pretty brilliant job of recreating the vampire mythology for her own purposes within her own world. I mean, there's a million variations on that theme. She uses it in a particular way, and I think she uses it in a very positive way in the sense that Carlyle and his family stand out because of the decisions they make in valuing human life and disciplining themselves at great personal difficulty and risk. The werewolf thing, I think, is even a little more that way because Jacob and his brothers are not really werewolves in the classic sense. I mean, what she has written in the books is a particular case that is directly connected to the local setting and to the presence of vampires and so forth. And simply to say, oh, well, there's werewolves and vampires, therefore this is occultic, is really not a fair read of the story. And I think one simply has to deal with fictional devices and literary devices and evaluate them on the basis of how they're used rather than drawing conclusions simply on the basis of superficial similarities to occultic practices in the world. I just don't see that. That to me is not a concern with these books.
Finally then, with only a minute, should Christian parents allow their kids to go see Twilight New Moon? 1 minute.
I think that's a parental decision that's going to differ on a case-by-case basis. I'm a strong advocate of the Fourth Commandment, as you've heard me say many times. I took three of my children to see it last night, my 15-year-old, my 13-year-old, and my 11-year-old. And my 7-year-old is asking if he can go see it. I frankly don't really have any qualms about taking him, so I probably will try to find a time when I can take him to see it. I think, especially with younger children, parents really ought to watch it with their children and then discuss it with them rather than just turning them loose to go watch it with friends. So I think whether parents exercise their authority by saying, no, I don't want you to see this, or by saying, sure, I think it's fine if you want to see this, I think parents ought to engage in conversation. This is one thing the series does invite, is really good conversation about fundamental aspects of life, relationships, friendship, boyfriends and girlfriends, marriage, human life. I mean, the series does invite some pretty good conversations, but those conversations won't happen if parents actually aren't paying attention and allowing themselves to become familiar and informed as well. So, I mean, that's what I would encourage.
Dr. Richard Stockwish is pastor of Emmaus Lutheran Church in South Bend, Indiana, and a regular guest here on Issues, Etc. We will be posting a link to something that he's written about Twilight at our website, issuesetc.org. Just click On Demand. Richard, thank you very much.
It's always my pleasure, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we'll discuss the failure of naturalism. Our guest will be J.P. Moreland. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November is the Lutheran Study Bible. In the pages of the Lutheran Study Bible, you're going to find not only an excellent translation of the text of the Old and New Testament and the scholarship that attends it, verse by verse, chapter by chapter, maps and graphs and all those things. You'll find devotional material. You'll find, mining the very depths of Christian history, testimonies from the very earliest Christians, from what we would call the Church Fathers. That's another strength of the Lutheran Study Bible. You can find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and order the Lutheran Study Bible, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.